This is a podcast from SPH Radio.
Welcome to The Green Wire, the podcast that plugs you into the latest in sustainability and technology with me, Rachel Kelly. Now, when you're putting an outfit together, we often like to color coordinate. My favorite combo is a nice red jacket with some black office wear. Okay, I like red. Stands out. Anyway, but quite often as we bring vibrant hues together, we seldom stop to think about where these colours or dyes come from. Well, one company does think about this, and in a sustainable manner. That company is Colour eFix, and we're joined now by Orr Yakoni, founder and CEO of Colour eFix, to find out more. Orr, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Rachel. Good afternoon. Pleasure.
It's our absolute pleasure to have you with us. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more. Let's just rewind and start at the very beginning. Tell us about the company. What was the catalyst? Where did it all begin? What's your story?
So Colorifix actually started because Jim, my co-founder, and I engaged in water quality projects using synthetic biology. We were working on developing sensors to see if water was essentially safe to drink or not from the presence of different things in the water, like heavy metals such as arsenic. So we went to places that are affected by this, and they're mostly in South and Southeast Asia. And that's where we actually got exposed to the scale of the impact of the textile industry, because when we asked people what else is in your water that bothers you, a lot of the chemicals that they told us about actually ended up coming from this industry. And that's where we got to understand that the wet processing side of textiles, which is one of the largest industries on the planet by necessity, has such an enormous impact on water use, chemical use, and energy use, and ultimately is one of the most environmentally impactful industrial activities we do as a species. So given our passion for what we do and working with nature, using natural systems to essentially create things, we thought, well, our sensor is based on microorganisms that change color if the water is not safe to drink. Wouldn't it be great if we could change the color of the fabric and instead of monitoring for these chemicals, replace them with something that is much more sustainable and closer to nature? And that's exactly what we've done.
And that's fascinating because obviously you're not from the fashion industry, from the sector. So tell us a little bit more about your background, because it's fascinating how you're combining science with, as you mentioned, one of the top polluting industries in the world.
So synthetic biology, which is the discipline that everything we do is based on, basically seeks to understand how nature makes things, because everything we see around us in the natural world is governed by the same set of rules. All living things use DNA to encode information, which then becomes different things that we see, be it pigments that we see in flowers and insects, to antibodies, different drugs that we use in medicine, and even things that can eventually replace fuels. These are all things that nature makes every day, and we look for how it's made, the whole blueprint of how nature builds the machinery towards making this thing. And then we basically use that message to make our product, which is a new way of dyeing fabric. But synthetic biology really is about seeking to understand nature and employ the same mechanisms, the same solutions that nature has developed for the problems we are trying to solve. And these, unfortunately, end up being problems we've created as a species.
And you've got a wonderful quote on your website as well. I love this. It says, "Our goal is to borrow from nature, not to take from it, and move from petrochemicals into a non-polluting renewable chemistry that's enabled by biology for the entirety of the dyeing process." So can you talk to us a little bit about how this works? Help us to visualize the science. So, I mean, for example, here in Singapore, we do use a lot of natural dyes in our kuehs, which are our local cakes. So we have these beautiful blue pea flowers that grow everywhere, and we use it to color our rice, we use it to color our cakes. But can you give us some examples of the start process for this DNA sequencing, what's the journey like when you're working on a color or you get inspired?
Great. So as you mentioned, nature makes every hue and shade of color, but not all pigments that appear in nature are useful for every application. So in food, it doesn't have to really be quite as light fast or wash fast, because those aren't processes that we apply to food. So for textiles, we want something that's light fast, something that's going to be heat resistant, right? So you can iron it after, for instance. Things like that need to come into consideration. How it reacts with sweat, all those things end up being very important. So what we do is we look for pigments in nature that we think meet these characteristics. So for as an example, parrots are very special. Most feathers have structural color, but parrots have pigments in them. So what we can do is take a single feather from a parrot, scrape some cells off the bottom of the feather and look in the DNA for the message, make red. We can then take that message, put it into our microorganism, which is a type of microorganism that's been widely used to make different products in the pharmaceutical industry and food industry. So we know it's safe. And then through fermentation, very much the same process as used to make beer, we make our product. So instead of making the alcohol, we're making the pigment. And the great thing is biology is doing it the same way that the parrot would do it, meaning starting from sugar and nitrogen and building all of the chemistry towards getting that pigment. Now, what Colorifix does isn't just make the pigment. We use biology to transfer the pigment as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the impact from the tech, from the wet processing, from dyeing itself, isn't from the pigment, but it's all the other chemicals you put in the dyeing machine to get the pigment to stick to the fabric and stay there. And instead of using those chemicals, we're using our microorganisms. The cells are depositing and fixing the dyes and pigments directly onto the fabric. And because of that, we're not using mordants, we're not using binders or linkers or any of those other chemicals, which end up being much more harmful than the dyes themselves.
And I mean, just something that you mentioned there about the process, because I was also reading on your site in terms of the goal is, you know, not to disrupt the industry too much in the sense that, you know, you still people within the industry still need to make a living. So can you talk to us about how your solution then would slot in with the current industry at the moment? What are some of the changes that perhaps manufacturers or fashion designers or fashion firms would need to make if they were to implement the solution?
One of the key differences, in my view, between synthetic biology and molecular biology, as it were, is the integration of responsible innovation in how we design a process. So beyond the environmental sustainability, we wanted to see and how we can apply this in a way that doesn't impact people's jobs and livelihoods, in a way that adds value to everyone rather than taking value away from someone who really needs it.
Yeah.
So in the process of looking at what we do, well, we're not using new dye machines. We're not using needing people to be retrained in how they dye fabric. We're just changing what's going into the machine. So the people who are mostly employed doing the activity don't see any loss in what they're doing. They only see a gain in that they're reducing the environmental footprint by bringing down the temperature, reducing the amount of water, and eliminating the use of any petrochemical in the process.
You're listening to The Green Wire, the podcast that plugs you into the latest in sustainability and technology with me, Rachel Kelly. In this episode, we're talking to Orya Kony, founder and CEO of Colorifix, about sustainable dye solutions.
So talk to us about the water reduction and the energy reduction, because it also states on your site that your solution uses 10 times less water. It's 100% natural, not toxic. So tell us more about those numbers. And also, I understand that you're doing some industrial pilots as well. Very busy. What's the latest?
So as you mentioned, we're starting to do industrial pilots, and we're very happy with how those have gone, and now we're scaling those up further. And in the course of the pilot, we also get to see how the process behaves in a real industrial setting, not just in a lab. And some of the figures we're getting out are quite amazing. We're waiting for the third party validation on our LCA, but the preliminary numbers are showing that we're saving up to 40 liters of water per kilo of fabric across the whole dyeing and washing and everything process by using this type of dyeing. We're saving over 70% on energy and over 65% on CO2 overall in the dyeing process itself. So the benefits come far beyond just the source of the dye with the process, because you get to use so much less water, because the process is so efficient and you exhaust the dye and nothing is left in the water. It means you need to wash it a lot less as well, and that's where you lose a lot of water too.
You know, we've seen multiple news reports about the toxicity of the fashion industry. High street brands have been coming out to say that, or make sustainable targets and claims. So what kind of response have you had from the industry to your solution?
I have to say that the reaction from the industry has been incredibly positive throughout. The industry, everyone from brands to manufacturers, dye houses, even the pigment producers themselves like what we're doing and have helped us along, giving us advice here and there, helping us find the right partners, and always supporting us along the way with telling people our story until we're ready to help them with our product. And that's exactly where we are now.
And, you know, we've got to talk about where we are now because we're 18 months into a pandemic as well. So how has this impacted your business and perhaps the demand that you've seen for what you do? Because conversations surrounding conservation have really just been thrust forward on the back of everything that's been going on in the last over a year now. So how has that shifted some of the conversations that you're having as well?
We're seeing a lot more demand for innovation and sustainability across the industry. Brands have been aware for you know, since the mid-90s, really, about the impact that they're having and have been working towards reducing that. But I think the pandemic and the change in people's habits have forced people to stop and rethink. Mm-hmm. And that's been an opportunity that I see a lot of the industry seizing and using it as a vehicle for change. So the fact that we can't make things right now the way we're used to means we can think about how can we make them better when we can start doing them again. And I can really see that in some of the communication and some of the restructuring, the refocus of some of the brands that we're talking to, and the number of mills that are reaching out to us wanting to change the way they do things now that they have a bit of time and breathing space to do something new. So there's always a positive to negative things. It's just about looking for it, right? It has been difficult. It has meant slowing down. It has meant not being able to travel and see our customers and help them when there's an issue. But it's also forced us to look beyond that and look for how we get around some of the issues. And for instance, one of the good things that's come out of it for us is we have to readdress how we provide tech support, because we can't really be sending people all the time when there's quarantine both ways or potential quarantine. So we had to resort to getting AR glasses so we can communicate real time with the customer and see their machine real time. They can see our machine real time and show them what they're doing wrong or how to do it right next time.
So, you know, what's next for you then? As you mentioned, there's this whole trend towards building back better. What's next for Colorifix? What have you got on the horizon? Growth plans, new solutions? What are you working on?
Well, we're always working on new colors and new products for the industry. We've focused a lot on getting to scale over the last few months, and that's gotten us through our first pilots fairly successfully. And now we're scaling that one further, and we're taking quite a few more of them online now. It's just awaiting for COVID restrictions and people to be able to work safely. But we are moving forward on quite a few different places. So Portugal, Bosnia, Italy, and India are all places that we're setting up and in different stages of working at the moment.
So what are your long-term plans then? Where do you see Colorifix in the next 5 to 10 years on the back of everything that's been happening?
Well, I hope to see instances of this technology being used around the world. After all, we're here to enable the use of the technology. We're not a dye house, we're not a mill. Mm. We're here to enable them to use the technology and spread its use. So I hope to see it used widely. I hope to see people enjoying the product, meaning that they can see that they can actually feel a difference in what they're buying, not just from the perspective of how they feel about what they've bought, but how they feel when they wear it. Wow. So we really hope that to get to that level by that point.
So Orr, last question for you. What's your favorite color?
Well, my favorite color is purple. It's one of the most special colors in nature for me. It's very rare. It's not very stable. Even though you can find a lot of purples out there, you won't find a lot of purples that have good fastness properties. And that was the breakout color, both in the old times with Tyrian purple, in the industrial chemical revolution with mauvein, which was the first synthetic pigment. And it was actually our first pigment as well, was a purple. So it's a color with a lot of story behind it.
Was that because of your personal preference for the color or because you wanted to take up the challenge?
Well, my favorite color used to be yellow. it became purple once I realized how special that color actually is.
Wonderful. Well, Orr, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me tonight and for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for your time, Rachel. A pleasure.
You've been listening to The Green Wire with me, Rachel Kelly, and we've been speaking to Orr Yakoni, founder and CEO of Colorifix.
The Green Wire is a production of SPH Radio. It's hosted and produced by Rachel Kelly from Money FM 89.3. You can also find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcast, and streaming on Google Home. And if you have feedback for us, send it to sphradio@sph.com.sg.